Only by our relationship to others will we know our relationship to God. He who walks in the dark does not know where he is going. But you have the light, believe in the light, that you may be sons of the light. Only by our relationship to others can we know our relationship to God. If we are unkind, if we are envious, if we are cruel, if we are violent, if we are unforgiving to our neighbor, that is the exact representation of the unkind to God. If you look into your mind, you will see the truth. Can it be otherwise? God, being omnipotent and omnipresent, must be in your neighbor as well as yourself. And it is himself who causes all the conditions that hinder the expression of self within. The true self within is life and the life. Believe in the light that is coming to the light. Now, though we are dealing with the relative activity, we must not lose the realization of that which is in itself complete, beyond all relative activity, and is the cause of relative activity. What we see in the outside by our eyes and hear by our ears, we will see that it is relative. So in this lesson, we will see that these are vibrations that pass into brain and mind, and we'll begin to see what they are. Now, our work in these enlightening lessons is not to be caught up in the relative, but to understand ourselves and the mechanisms which we use, and this brings us to our relationship with others. We must begin to understand what our relationship is. If our relationship becomes merely a means of self-gratification, retreat, attachment, and fear, we must discern this clearly. Then our relationship will become a self-revealing force, a mirror in which we begin to discover ourselves. Our tendencies, our pretensions, selfish unlimited motives, fear, and so on. And it is only by discerning our relationship others, do we begin to realize what we are ourselves? Unless you know what you are yourself, you will never be able to eliminate these conditions. And it is to know what oneself is virtue. Not to cover up what oneself is not virtue, but that is the common idea of virtue. Virtue is discerning the self and all the ways God and understanding of God, so that these things can be clear, and there you will find after the self has been eliminated, there remains the real self, that which in itself is with God's existence. But if you try to cover up your so-called conditions, your good and evil, and you think that is virtue by coming respectful, then that is not virtue, it is an illusion. So we see clearly and distinctly that virtue is being and not becoming. Being is now, that is, spirit is now, truth is now, can never become anything else. Life is now, can never become life, it is now. Being is now, can never become being, it is now. But if you want to become something, then you're lost. You're in the outer ring, you're caught up in the relative, and you're not being. Being is virtue, becoming is not virtue. A relationship must be a self-revealing process until out of it comes self-knowledge. With deep self-knowledge, then there is inexhaustible love and wisdom. We will see what we are by our relationship, if we are aware, watch. And it is to be always aware and watchful, as Jesus said, watch and pray. The cause of enmity in all relationships is when relationship to us is not a self-revealing good. We cause enmity through pride of position, pride of knowledge, pride of family, which awakens ill will and envy in others. But where there is neither enemy nor friend, forgiver or forgiven, where the self has disappeared, there is no cause for enmity. It's in the self then where there is enemy and friend. It is the self then where there is forgiver and forgiven. It is the self then that must disappear, and then there is neither of these at all. Therefore, there is no enmity, because in God there is neither good nor evil, neither is there enemy nor friend, neither is forgiver or forgiven, because God is life, complete, omnipotent, omniscient, all wisdom, all knowledge, everywhere, and there is nowhere where he is not. Therefore, it is clearly and distinctly, when you have reached that see, good and evil passes into nothingness. The tree grows out of man's life. Says we, that the fruit of this tree will die in your sin, will die in your ignorance. And it is sin, then, the only sin the man has is the self. The self is born in sin. The self is sin. Because it is preventing the expression of that which is in itself. Therefore, it is deep. To defend is to engender fear. The state of non-fear is not the opposite of fear, nor is it courage. It is the understanding of fear, and in this is the cessation of fear, and not becoming courageous. For this is but to live in opposite. Where there is continual conflict, fear, and its opposite. So therefore, if you live in opposite, you know that you're living in your mind. You know that you're living in conflict. If you're living in faith and fear, if you're living in good and evil, if you're living in health and in health, if you're living in failure and success, if you're living in all these things, you will see that it is in opposites. Now, where there is opposites, there must be conflict. Therefore, how do you overcome the opposite? A state of non-fear is not the opposite of fear, nor is it courage. It is the understanding of the opposite lead you of opposites. The understanding of what the opposite is and the opposites are, then you drop away from you and you find yourself free. The mind is the vehicle for us when the individual is not aware of that which is the real self. Now you will never know what that real self is. You will never know what it is, but you will know that. After you have heard this lecture, you will be able to, I hope, to detach yourself from your mind and your senses, and therefore be able to stand alone in your consciousness. That consciousness will become aware of itself, but not what it is. It cannot dissect itself, it cannot analyze itself, it doesn't know what it is, it only knows that. When the consciousness is aware, then the intelligence outfits itself. Dependence on the external, which is unknown, creates fear. Dependence on ideas, lack of self-knowledge, inward poverty, and ignorance cause fear. But through watchful awareness we begin to comprehend the cause of fear. Fear is always related to the past and the future and influences the present. To be watchful awareness this watchful awareness is this. There is something that is continually aware of things external to itself. This awareness must stand aloof from its own discernment. That is the discerning of the things and conditions. Otherwise, it will be caught up in these things. The consciousness is a power that is creative. It is creativeness. Now, if creativeness is caught up in the relative, or fear, or anxiety, or ill health, it will produce those conditions because consciousness is creative. Then consciousness must discern these things clearly and understand them, what they are, and also be independent of them, standing aloof and aware, watching the process of discernment taking place, yet not being caught up in it. When consciousness frees itself, then it is creative, and there is nothing impossible to it, because the consciousness of God is the consciousness in man, because there cannot be two consciousnesses. There cannot be two of them. There could only be one, otherwise God could not be infinite as he is. We see clearly then that the mind, the images, the fear, the anxiety, the conditions, and the self, which is caught up in these things, the self, that self which is an illusion, it's not a real thing at all, it's a projection of the inner self, where the self has been caught up. The self is the root of all fear. Therefore, to become aware of the ways of the self now, fear begins to disappear. To inhibit or suppress fear does not remove fear. To try and put fear to your back and have courage, that doesn't eliminate fear. That very often makes fear more pronounced. You can put a positive in the place of a negative. It cannot be done. A lot of people think and tell you that it can be done, but you'll find out that it can't be done. The negative is always there. Always rises up at the very moment when you least expect it. Unless it is understood, unless it is there and maintained, it can never dissolve or away. So to inhibit or suppress fear does not remove fear. Cause must be understood. Then it dissolves away, and that which is always present is fear. In this there is neither fear nor courage, but complete understanding with love and wisdom. Let us now examine the human being from a point of radiation. We can say without contradiction that the human being is the most highly evolved entity on this earth. Therefore, the most perfect atomic furnace on earth. We emit radiations in the form of electromagnetic waves which vibrate continually from our mind, our brain, our nervous system to our aura. We are continually emitting those vibrations continuously, and there is no stopping of these various vibrations, night and day is continuous. There is in the mind a general subconscious mentality that is expressing itself through the aura. Your general makeup is the continual expression of this particular vibration. And it is night and day, all the time, expressing itself outwardly. It never sleeps, it never tires, it is continually setting up these vibrations. Not only that, but these vibrations can be photographed as they are caught, passing through the magnetic aura, just after the physical body. So therefore we see going out from our aura, these vibrations can be either wholesome or harmful according to our thoughts. Our thought is dependent upon our understanding. Remember that. Your thought is dependent upon your understanding. If you do not understand, you're caught up in a belief. You're caught up in tradition. You're caught up in something. Now you'll find that your thought is based upon these things. Your thought is continually expressing a thought in what you believe. But if you can have no belief at all, you can be free. You can be able then to have pure thinking because your thoughts will be pure and not according to your belief. Belief is of the mind, it is not a truth. An idea is of the mind, it is not truth. An idea of truth is not truth. A belief in truth is not truth. A belief in God is not God. Your belief in God is according to your own makeup. Every person has a God of their own according to their own standard. So you pray to this God external to yourself, which is according to your own standard. Whether you are a Catholic or a Protestant or a Hindu or a Mohammedan or anything else, you do the same thing. Therefore, you're all separated in your mind through your beliefs, through your ideas. Well, ideas will never lead you to the truth. Neither will beliefs. They will always lead you away from the truth. But what will lead you to the truth is to discern and understand what your belief is and what your ideas are. Therefore, you will be able to see how false they are and they will drop away from you. Then, that which is real in itself is there. No good. That is truth. That is virtue. But if you cling on to a belief, and try to become, that is not good, that is ignorance, it's illusion. So thought depends upon our understanding. That is why knowing the mechanism only is not enough. We must know ourselves first. Then we can use the mechanism with understanding and with profit. Thought produced from a clear mind produces its kind. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So, we are going to look at the mechanism tonight. How this mechanism of ours works, how we interpret various vibrations, how we see, how we hear, and how we feel. We will understand the mechanism. But to understand the mechanism is not enough. We must understand ourselves first. That is why, if you understand yourself, and you can understand yourself better through your relationship to others than any other way. Because if you can discern your thoughts, your actions, your motives, your words, your feelings towards others, you begin to discern yourself. And by discerning these things, you will see how false they are, and you will drop away from it. A person who is free is not caught up in anything at all with their neighbor. They are not caught up in them. They don't treat the neighbor as a piece of furniture. They are not afraid of their neighbor. They are not afraid what they shall say to their neighbor. They do not care because they have the inner conviction that their attitude to their neighbor is an attitude to God. And you know clearly, when that is found, that the self is dissolved away, you find that the greater self is in the neighbor as well. The same self in yourself is yourself in your neighbor. Yourself is in your neighbor. Therefore, your relationship to your neighbor is your relationship to God. And unless you cannot discern, if you do not discern your thoughts, your motives, your actions, and how you react to your neighbor, then you can never be free. And in your relationship to your neighbor, so you will know yourself better than anything else. Now, this is not a blind force, but an intelligent thought power that can create and materialize bounties for humanity and can destroy the whole planet. This living atomic furnace has within absolute an indissoluble essence of spirit as our source of power, consciousness is caught. If the consciousness is caught up in the undiscovered self, then tears will rain through the whole body and mind. But if the self is understood and dissolved, our consciousness is then free. Harmony will reign, for the true self is harmony itself. The manifestation of such wonderful, overwhelming capabilities of the true self can be effectively achieved through scientific application of pranayama, this control of the universal energy. Now, pranayama is a word that is given as a means to convey to the mind of the jala something that he must do, something that he must realize, and he must find the mechanism before them the working of this power come within himself. Therefore, pranayama is a consciousness that is power. The consciousness becomes aware of itself as the cause of all activity in the universe, the cause of all activity within man and external man. The consciousness then sets up certain vibrations. It's like a radio station sending out waves continuously throughout the whole world. A radio station will magnetize the whole ether of the world, and you can hear that broadcast in any part of the world at the same time, both perpendicular and horizontal, across the world, right in the stratosphere, and down in the bowels of the air, because ether interpenetrates not only the earth, but right up into the stratosphere as well, carrying that magnetization of the vibration. Consciousness is similar. It's a force, it's created, and it's continually sending out vibrations which are electromagnetic and are so powerful in its nature that can enter into the walls of the atoms and transform them. The basis of matter then becomes putty in the hands of an individual who understands the foundation and the practice of pranayama. The next step in this wonderful science is the withdrawal of the senses from both external objects and internal senses within, into the conscious principle of all creation. Then the inner senses will be revealed. The inner senses, they are not physical senses. Senses where size, color, and all the dimensions that you see through your eyes, or feel, or hear, are created within the mind. Now we must not confuse the other organs such as eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin with the inner senses. For each organ is but an instrument and does not in itself possess the faculty of perception, which is the result of a number of mental processes. Experience is experienced only after the interpretation of the sensation impulses which are reported to the respective centers in the brain. You cannot experience anything until such time as the full process has taken place, that the impulse that are carried from the various external organs are carried to the various centers of the brain, and there they are interpreted accordingly. This experience can only be experienced and known when all these impulses are reported to respective centers of the brain. The mind then forms the image of what is seen and heard and felt. It was difficult for you to think along those lines because you have never been taught to think along those lines. But if you listen to me carefully, you will see what is taking place. Then you will understand much better all about the most extraordinary and wonderful instrument God has created through which he can express himself. The consciousness, the sixth sense, having recognized and reflected the image, gives a reality to the effect. Remember, this is not cause, but an effect of an effect. The primary object of the senses is to serve as reporter to our higher sovereign power. With this understanding, we see that the senses rush out and attach themselves to external objects and internal sensations. In this way, they have constantly engaged the mind and consciousness in interpreting these sensations, with the result that the mind and consciousness have identified themselves with these sensations reported by the senses. Hence, the mind and consciousness have had no rest, being the slave of the senses, instead of making them docile servants. So you see, it is the understanding of this, that the senses are your servants, are your means of obtaining outside impulses, outside vibrations, and they themselves have no power of their own. But you give them a power because your consciousness is caught up in the sensation or the vibrations received by you through the senses. So constantly your mind and consciousness is caught up and becomes a slave of the senses, instead of making the senses docile servants as they should be. Now, to establish mastery over the mind and senses, pratyahara is the method by which this is done. Pratyahara is also a name given to Jara, so that he can realize what he is doing. That is, pranayama is the controlling of the universal energy through a conscious awareness. Pratyahara is to be able to detach the consciousness from all senses and from all external things. It is done partially unconsciously by when you are engaged in any particular thing that you are extremely interested in. When you are unconsciously caught up in a book or a film, when you are unconsciously caught up in something that prevents all outside vibrations from entering into your mind, you have closed off these senses unconsciously. Therefore, those noises that are going outside or internal sensations do not reach the center of your brain. They have been disconnected for the time being because you have created, by your sense of concentration, a complete locking up of all the senses, and the center of the brain do not receive these particular vibrations. Therefore, unconsciously, you have performed what we call pratyahara, partially. The pratyahara is a conscious withdrawal from all external world and all internal sensations, so that the consciousness stands on itself as creativeness, having no other vibrations affecting it in any way. It stands out alone as the consciousness of God, as creativeness, and has no other power operating against it. If your consciousness is caught up, then in your senses, you see that you have not a power to create, because your consciousness is aware of what your senses is doing to it. Now, pratyahara then is a state of consciousness where the consciousness becomes creative. You cannot be in this high know that. But it is possible by understanding what it means. And a few minutes every day of the withdrawal from the center into your state of consciousness. That state of consciousness where you become aware only of consciousness as being. Consciousness is called, then consciousness is free. And when the consciousness is free, then you are created. Only then are you created. At that moment, all is possible. Jesus was that particular state. Whenever he wanted to do anything, instantly he was able to do that. His very words convey to you the truth about it. He says, I and the Father are one. In that moment, that split second of the moment, he was then creative and all was possible unto him. But if he tried to remember that second, that split second, and try to repeat that split second, it would be an experience. It would be memory. It would be no longer reality. It would be no longer I and the Father are one. It would be a memory and an idea in his mind, and therefore he would have lost it. But his consciousness free and creative, at that moment all was possible. In the split seconds at once, he said, thy servant is whole at this very moment. And it is so. That pratyahara is the means whereby then the consciousness can extract itself from the senses. Now we will go on further and we will see. This is a means of internal awareness and direction of the mind on a particular subject or object without interruption from external and internal sensations. Sometimes we are capable of doing this unconsciously when we are engaged in a particular work with interest, where there are external noises going on incessantly, yet we are unaware of them. We are oblivious to our surroundings. This inner remoteness from the tumult around us is accomplished through the unconscious mechanism brought about by our intense concentration. By silencing all centers receiving such vibrations, there is an unconscious withdrawal from the outside world. When this is accomplished consciously, you have mastered pratyahara. Why is it sometimes, unconsciously, the doctor will say to you, have you got a hobby of some kind? Well, if you haven't a hobby, get one. So the person gets a hobby, and before they know who they are, the whole consciousness is caught up in their hobby. All the sensations that come from their internal bodies and conditions of their body begins to become less and less, and they are forgotten. Nature takes their whole hand in the job, and she does the work while you, consciousness, is caught up in your hobby. You see, that is pratyahara, in an unconscious state. There are many ways in which this unconscious withdrawal is revealed. During tense emotional moments, while watching a movie, while reading an engrossing book, when listening to an absorbing lecture, even time and place disappear. Let us now examine what happens when the reflected light vibration of an object reaches the eye. The light rays pass through the lens of the eye and fill the retina with a small image of the object. The rays of the optical image are broken up and transformed into electromagnetic waves which are transmitted through the optic nerve. These electromagnetic waves pass down the optic nerve, which is just like a wire carrying vibrations. These waves then pass through the optic thalamus, the back of the eyes, a sort of transforming station, then passes them over to the occipital center of the brain, which is situated at the back of the head, here. These waves now being fit for reception in that center. Now the function of this visual center in the brain is to convert these refined impulses into sensation of color, dimension, and form, etc., which are presented to other centers of the brain, which coordinate all these impulses, adding qualities and properties from the memory cells to make the image distinctive through experience. Now we see the whole united image is manufactured and the mind assumes the form of the external image and presents it to the consciousness. The mind assumes the form of that external image, otherwise it could never be at all. The mirror of the consciousness reflects the image of the mind and gives it an objective reality, and we become consciously aware of it, knowing perfectly well that nothing exists to us unless we are consciously aware of it. Even if it is in the mind, if I hypnotize you and I give you a picture you create in your mind, and you wake up again, you will not have that picture at all because you're not consciously aware of it. But when you are consciously aware of the picture in your mind, you know that it is. Now we see clearly what I'm getting at is this, that the principles of perception, interpretation, cognition, and memory have produced the vision, experience, and knowledge of the external object. Nothing exists to us unless we are conscious of it. We now realize that neither the lens nor the million photosensitive cells of the retina nor the optic apparatus see the object in its actual size, nor the real situation of the object. They merely photograph or register it as a tiny optical image, break it into minute points of light, and convert it into electromagnetic impulses, transmitting them to the various centers. The seer resides within. Therefore, all other senses do similar work, conveying impulses to the respective centers within the brain, each situated in its proper location. All senses are mental and not physical, so is the experience of all natural phenomena. So we see that all experience is mental. It cannot be anything else. Now I'm going to prove to you experience in matter and physical is mental. And I'm going to prove to you that matter is also mind, and mind is matter. The following description will give you the understanding of the cause of the universal phenomena. There is only one in which all exist, God, the spirit consciousness, divine mind, the unknowable, the invisible. Now the most perfect conception capable to the highest mind within the divine conceives of Father, Mother, God, which includes love and wisdom, the impersonal principles behind the whole manifested universe, within the divine consciousness. Because all must be within the consciousness, otherwise it could not exist as an objective reality. You exist in the consciousness of God, otherwise you could not exist at all, because there could be no manifestation of you if it was not so. Then comes divine ideas. Divine ideas are born in the divine consciousness, just as an idea can be born also out of your consciousness. You create the idea then in your mind. The idea now in your mind then becomes the particular pattern from which your thoughts move out. Your thoughts revolve around the idea and move out in different directions, gathering other information to bring about that idea to a concrete form in the physical. So that the idea being first a mental thing becomes a physical thing after. So it is so in the divine mind, in the divine consciousness, and you'll see how clear this is. Then comes the divine ideas, born in the divine consciousness, is the basis of all form created, which includes the principles of love and wisdom. Love and wisdom, then, is the foundation of everything created in God. And love and wisdom, being omnipotent and omniscient and omnipresent, everywhere, there is nowhere it is not. Therefore we see that is the foundation of everything created in the universe, including yourselves. The principle of power is the unchanging expression of God's universal ideas, all within the divine consciousness. Therefore consciousness is cause. Consciousness being cause, the universal ideas then are the stable, complete thing, and the principles of power is the unchanging expression of those ideas, being divine in nature, and no one can change them. These ideas are perfect in themselves and contain divine love and wisdom, and no one can alter them, no one can change them, and they are the power principle which is manifesting in the world today and at any other time. Man may use this power which he has, which we have, is given power to use the prana in any way he wishes, but then he's responsible to himself for it. Now comes the effect of cause, force, laws, special method of action of the ideas and principles. We see that these laws are adamant. We therefore cannot break the law. The law breaks us unless we cooperate. So one people say that we break the law, but we don't. It's the universal law breaks us. And that's why you are broken up, because you have tried to break the universal law. When you cooperate with the universal law, you cooperate with love and wisdom as the foundation of your form, condition, whatever the case may be, or your environment. Then comes magnetism essences, which are the vital utterances of ideas, principles, and laws. Here, man's power is neutralized, and the perfect remains perfect. Nothing can go beyond the essence. Man can create within himself. He can create on his environment. He can destroy his own body. He can destroy the bodies of others. But he can never in any way pass that particular mechanism and essence which is the vital utterances of the ideas, which is where cause ends and effect begins. Cause ends in the essences and effect begins. We see then the manifestation of form after it reaches that particular state of essences out into the ethers, from the ethers then down into the atmosphere, from the atmospheres to the fluids, from the fluids to the solids, and we find there that the solids then give the manifestation of the form as you see it. But all is atoms. All are atoms in vibration. All atoms forming according to the divine idea that held fast in the divine mind. You can change the atomic structure in the ether. You can change the atoms and transform them in your body. But you cannot pass beyond the essences, which is that particular substance where cause ends and effect begin. Man has control over the effects, but not over the cause. So cause remains adamant, always and complete, and consciousness is cause. Then it is followed by electricity ethers, which is the effect, the universal medium for the manifestation of the ideas, principles, laws, and essences. These are invisible to the physical eye, being electromagnetic in nature and having a velocity of 186,000 miles per second. Now we reach the rate of sound, 750 miles per hour, which includes atmospheres and vapors. The reducing laboratory through which flows the effects of ideas, principles, laws, essences, and ethers. Then comes the water fluids, the viaduct for the transmission of the slowing of every substance and force in the universe, and earth solids, the lowest condition of substance and the slowest utterances of ideas, principles, laws, essences, vapors, and fluids. So we see that the very beginning, the very essence of the very idea is incorporated through the essences, through the ethers, through the fluids, and down in through the solids, and all are manifesting now in this particular state of manifestation as your body. Therefore, the Spirit of God that existed in the beginning, and the Word that existed in the beginning, was made flesh and still remains immortal. You may read this back and you will reach the ultimate reality. Read it down and you will reach the ultimate form in the physical. There is no division anywhere. The ultimate has become form, and form returns to the ultimate. All are one. Therefore, mind and matter are interchangeable, convertible, essential and identical, eternally harmonious, welded by polarities of positive and negative forces or electromagnetic activities. Now let us put it this way. I will show in a few minutes, as quick as possible, one, who practices as a means of showing the activities of this one. We'll put positive cause here. That we put, first of all, ideas, principles, and laws. Now we have here in the center, we have the essences, which are passive in nature. This then is positive cause, ideas, principles, and laws. Then you have the passive essences in which these manifest, and nothing interferes with the essences. Now we come to their effect, which I will put down as ether, vapor, fluids, and solids. These are negative, positive, cause, effect, positive, negative. And then we have completely here mind, matter. So there it is. We are interchangeable, convertible, identical, essential, eternally harmonious, welded by polarities of positive and negative forces, electromagnetic activities. So that is the way we see it clearly, completely. Therefore we see that this is the bridge. Passive being passive is the bridge between cause and effects. In the colors too, you've got the various colors, which green is always passive. So we have green as a passive. You have then the violets, the blues, then you have green here as a passive, and then you have the yellow and the orange and the red. These are the particular colors, with green always separating them. Green can be used at any time. It is never contraindicated under any circumstances. But you can have the violin and the blues counterindicated. You can have also the yellow, the orange, and the red counterindicated, but you can never have the green as a counterindicated in any way whatsoever. You can always use green as a color. And that will soothe the nerves. It will help both the positive and negative. It will keep them all neutralized because it is passive. It is the color of nature herself. It's through the trees and through the plants and everywhere. It's right through the whole of nature. The basis of all flowers, the basis of everything is green. It is nature's passive color and can be used at any time. Now we can discern our thinking and our actions in our relation to others, and we will see where we go wrong, where we cause strife and misery instead of harmony. Love and wisdom remain the impersonal principles which we must find within ourselves. Then only shall we be as He who created us in His own likeness. When we are lost in the self, the personal effects, we are no longer impersonal. When we are impersonal, we are cause, that is the real. To be impersonal, we have everything. To be personal, we lose everything, because these are effects, the world of relativity. He who seeks to retain his personal life will lose it, but he who gives up his life will retain his impersonal life. Benediction. O eternal love and wisdom, thou hast made thyself known to me only when I began to see my actions towards others. I found I was in truth to thee, for thou livest in my neighbours also. When all enmity was dissolved away, I found my true self, one with thee, O eternal love and wisdom.